So just to bring this section of the course to a close now, I thought we'd just wrap things up with a little story. Story's a little bit light-hearted, but I'm hoping it's really going to resonate with you in light of that which we've shared over the last few clips. So as the story goes, up in the heavenly realms, the gods were having this convention because they had this issue, you see. It had come to the chief god's attention that the human race were evolving, they were growing, they're having these paradigm shifts. There's guys like me teaching people how to coach other people effectively in life. And as the human race is starting to become clearer on exactly who it is and what it's capable of, this sent the gods into a bit of unrest. Because what they didn't want was the human race understanding that they are, in fact, unlimited by nature, in the same way as the gods are. So this was the truth that the gods have pretty much been hiding since the dawn of time. So the challenge, the problem was this: where would they hide these truths? The truths of what it actually means to be human. Because the gods certainly didn't want it becoming common knowledge throughout humanity, of what the human race was capable of. So the gods started debating, they started bickering, and one of the gods said, "Right, I've got a proposal. I am the god of the sea. I'm going to suggest that we take these truths of what it means to be human right down to the depths of the deepest ocean. We'll bury them there. The human race will never find them." And then the littlest god, well, he was just kind of hanging about in the background, and he stuck his hand up and he said, "Oh, excuse me, guys. I hear what you're saying. It's a pretty good proposal, but it's a little bit flawed because, you know, in case you haven't noticed, the human race is evolving scientifically and technologically at quite a phenomenal rate, and I fear that it's only a matter of a few years before they develop some sort of diving and breathing apparatus that's going to enable them to dive to the depths of the deepest ocean where they stand at risk of finding our truths. And then we're done for." The chief god, he's, you know, hammered down his staff and he said, "Yes, thank you, littlest god. That was some pretty smart and wise observations." He said, "Does anyone else have a proposal on where we could hide these truths?" So one of the other gods says, "Yes, I'm the god of the rainforests. I'm going to propose that we take these truths into the depths of the deepest rainforest where there's, you know, venomous insects and spiders and snakes and all these kind of things, and the human race couldn't even survive there without getting eaten by anacondas." And all the gods seemed to be in agreement until the littlest god said, excuse me, listen, I've got a bit of a, you know, observation here to make, and this is that the human race is evolving scientifically and technologically at quite a phenomenal rate. It's realistically only a matter of a few years before they develop some sort of plane that's going to enable them to, you know, drop down, find our truths and just extract them in minutes few, kind of like the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something like this." And all the gods were in agreement. "Oh, fantastic. Yeah, those Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. are pretty cool, capable individuals. Yeah, I think we might have to find somewhere slightly more effective to hide these truths." So as the conversation evolved, some of the gods discussed taking them out to the stars, to the satellites, but then the littlest god would remind them, scientific evolutions, technology is evolving, and they remembered. And eventually, they were at an absolute loss. They didn't know what to do with these truths about what it actually meant to be human. And the chief god said, "Right, enough, no more bickering. Does anyone have a proposal on where we hide these truths of what it actually means to live an effective human life?" And the littlest god stepped forth and he said, "Yes, I do. I have a great proposal. Because much of humanity is out there looking to prove itself. They're trying to figure out the stars. They've got all sorts of opinions about the gods. They're still trying to figure out the sexuality, whether they're male or female. So how about we take the truths about what it actually means to be human and hide our truths inside of the human race? Most of them are that unaware. They won't even think about looking for our truths there." Just an interesting little story, isn't it? But I'm sure you can probably relate on some level. So this is it. We're now at the end of section four of the course. This has been the core beliefs section. I just want to give an overall summary of kind of what we've looked at so far, just to refresh your memory. So right back at the start of section one, we looked at the beautiful attitudes of life coaching. And the reason why we went there first is because all relationships must be based upon a foundation of trust or they will not sustain. And if our clients do not know what we can trust them for, if they cannot trust us to be unconditionally accepting of them, of being non-judgmental by nature, they are never going to let us anywhere near their beliefs, even with a barge pole. All right. So the beautiful attitudes of life coaching must come first and foremost. We cannot be judging our clients based upon their actions, their behaviors, their beliefs, their sexual orientation, their religion, whatever. It doesn't make any difference because they already have most likely done so. And this will be their problem. So we went on to have a look at the purpose of life coaching and the overall process, which is quite straightforward. Life coaching is not about therapy. We're not here to make people's feelings go away. We're not here to change people's feelings. We're here to aid people in the process of growth and maturation, because when we assist people in this process, they automatically become more empowered to make the decisions that they need to make that are going to go on to spur on them taking the actions that they ultimately need to take. People are self-governing all of the time. They don't need gurus. They don't need people to spell out every single step that they need to take in life. Everyone is clear on where they want to be. It's just most people are not confident enough and secure enough within themselves to take those first few steps. So we then looked at the standard learning styles and core listening skills. The standard is about us identifying where people are at in terms of their readiness to be worked with. Some people, if they haven't made that decision to change, well, they ain't going to change, right? And remember, some people are going to come to a life coach because counselling never worked for them, or the energy healing never worked for them. It might have made them feel all warm and fuzzy for minutes, few, or for a day, or something like that. But the thing with feelings is they'll go, and then they'll come back again. And then they'll go, and then they'll come back again until we learn how to effectively self-manage and self-regulate, which again only happens once we are aware of ourselves. All right, so as life coaches, it's imperative that we are able to discern and see exactly where people are at. Are they open? Are they receptive? Are they appreciative? And if not, are they really the kind of people that we want to give our time to? Just bearing in mind that time is the most valuable commodity that we have in life. Learning styles. It's important that we also understand that people learn in different ways. Where some people might do well reading an article, reading a book, watching a video, other people need to feel the experience. They need to really immerse themselves in it. So it's not just what you say that's going to make an impact. It's sometimes how you say what you say. And we're going to be looking at communication skills shortly. But what I'm going to suggest here is listening skills kind of walk hand in hand with communication skills. Sometimes coaches especially, or trainers or teachers, think and assume that in order for us to be at our most effective, we must be saying stuff all of the time. And what I'm going to suggest is that sometimes one of the most powerful communication skills we can use is silence. Sometimes we say it best when we say nothing at all. So how effective we are at listening to people is going to determine how much we're able to see and gain insight into their life. Now, this is really only relevant once we've acknowledged that our perception does not equate to or equal our reality. Now, when many clients come to us, they're going to be talking and giving voice to, more often than not, perceived problems that they have, problems they think they have, problems they believe they have, issues they think they might have at some point in the future. Hell, I've even worked with some clients who were anxious about feeling anxious and stressed at the thought of just failing or getting stressed at some point in the future. So sometimes people have feelings about feelings. Some people might say that's completely insane. As life coaches, we've got to just embrace this fact that perception does not equal our reality. So sometimes The coaching process can be a bit of an educational process in terms of us just sharing that which we understand for the purpose of helping our clients to grow in self-awareness, knowing that once our clients start growing in self-awareness, they're also going to grow in their ability to self-manage and self-regulate more effectively too. All right, so what I'm saying here is we can make a massive impact in people's life when our goal is to help people grow in maturity, in responsibility, in decisiveness, in consistency, and in strength of character. If our goal is just to help people feel nice, just don't go there, friend. Just don't go there. The seven levels of consciousness and self-awareness. Do you remember that teaching? It's the seven levels on which people operate in life. Some people who are completely unaware will be operating out of this place of apathy, kind of like the victim mindset. And the more aware of ourselves we become, the more empowered we become, not just in terms of making decisions in our own life, but sometimes in terms of how boldly we will step outside the comfort zone and start influencing others. If we are managing ourselves effectively, then of course it goes without saying that in time we're going to start making a social impact. We're going to start influencing socially, possibly even managing socially. All right, what's the, there's an old saying, and this is the man or the woman that can manage his or herself will make a hell of a national leader. All right, because many leaders cannot manage themselves. All right, many leaders these days focus more of their energies and efforts into trying to manage other people, but they can't manage other people because they haven't yet learned how to emotionally manage themselves. So how effectively we self-regulate will determine how effectively we're able to help other people self-regulate. And obviously this is a part of the educational process. So how self-awareness impacts our social effectiveness kind of ties in with what I've just shared. We looked at thoughts, feelings, actions, outcomes, all right? Now, the outcomes in our lives, we will either like or dislike, we'll have world views about, opinions about, but we all play a part in producing them. Granted, some things will happen to us sometimes that we have no control over, but what we can control all of the time is how we choose to respond, all right? And this is where the self-regulation and the self-management kicks into play. We looked at the emotional IQ model to help us understand how to read our emotions. Now, all of this stuff is crucial first and foremost. This is all about laying a foundation for goal setting. I know we're going to be coming onto that in a few sections from now. I think we're onto communication skills. No, we're onto core values next, actually. And we've looked at, in this section, belief development. We've looked at Ellis's irrational beliefs. Now, granted, that was quite a funny video, all right? Quite lighthearted, quite humorous. But in all seriousness, these are the most common beliefs that people operate out of. And it's not like they're going to say, oh, yes, I believe that crazy belief that my life should be easy. But if you want to know what a person believes, observe their behavior. Actions paint a thousand words. Actions speak louder than words. All right. So sometimes a person will, give voice to what they claim to believe, but their actions and how they actually conduct themselves will paint a very different story. All right. So it's important we understand this so that we can sometimes call people on their shit, because this is the role of a life coach. We're not here to give people little tickles and make them feel happy and make them feel all warm and fuzzy and make them feel nice. All right. They can go to all your conventional, abstract, therapists for that kind of stuff. When people are ready to grow up and mature, all right, that's when we step in. Sometimes a life coach will be a person's last port of call once they've exhausted all other options. I've had this in the past many, many times. People have come to me and have said, I've come to a life coach, I'm desperate. I've been speaking to a counselor for 5 years and nothing's changed. And I ask the question, and it's taken you 5 years to notice this? My goodness, nothing will change until we decide to change and take action. All right. Locus of control, the belief modification process. Now, that was a really cool technique. All right. This is all about now, at this stage, us helping our clients to grasp a meaningful vision for their future, all right? One that's going to compel them to make the necessary changes that they need to make to get away from where they're at, i.e. the current state, and towards this place where they actually want to be. The belief modification process, remember that hierarchy, like that triangle, the six different levels? This is about us, you know, working with our clients to lead them, just inside of their own mind. It's more of a mental imagery exercise, away from kind of where they're at, their current environment, to their ultimate life purpose. And it allows them to tie everything in, helps them to see how them simply being who they are is ultimately what's gonna allow them to make the impact that they want to go on to make, which will make life meaningful for them, purposeful for them. And I think those were actually Karen's exact words. If you haven't practiced taking someone through this model yet, I'm going to strongly urge you to before you go on to the next section of the course. That's a massively, massively powerful exercise, by the way. Then last but not least, we've looked at the core identity coaching model and the good enough principle. All right, the two generally go hand in hand. Very, very simple ideas, granted. But you know what? Life does not need to be any more complex than this. The psychologies and psychiatry has done a fantastic job over the last 80 to 90 years of seriously overcomplicating the human experience. Guess when it is that we develop our beliefs in life? As children, right? Picture little Jimmy and little Hannah. Little Jimmy and little Hannah have a conversation, and little Hannah says, "Little Jimmy, you're smelly." And then he goes to school, and then little Harry says, "Jimmy, you're smelly. And he's just experienced two rejections now. He's been called smelly twice. And that's a bit of a coincidence. Then someone else calls him smelly. And guess what? The limiting identity belief is born. It's like this. It's completely irrational. Why? Because children at this stage of their development are not rational. They're not reasoning. They're not figuring out, well, what's actually true, what's not true. You know, am I really smelly or am I not smelly? It's a crazy example, granted. But we do not need to overcomplicate, right, the process of belief modification, right? Why? Because most of the beliefs that people have about themselves and about their abilities, they developed back when they were infants, not mature in their thinking whatsoever. So please, do not overcomplicate the process. You don't need to. Some of the academics might tell you that you have to, but you certainly do not, all right? I'm coming here from almost a decade's worth of experience, all right? And that brings us to around about where we're at now, and I think we're actually about halfway through the course. So if I haven't lost you thus far, then hopefully by now you're starting to see how this is all coming together. Everything that we've talked about until now has been about us really addressing more of the foundations, all right, that we can start building upon in the sections that follow. We've looked at every aspect of a person's life that would stand at risk of potentially holding them back and acting as more of a deterrent to prevent them from pursuing the future with all that they have. But once we've overcome and moved beyond limiting beliefs, this now sets us apart in a very different place to focus more on what our clients actually want on a values level, on a priorities level. Because before we come on to goals, we want to get clear on what their values and priorities are, so that then when we come on to goal setting, they can weigh their goals and their vision and their priorities up against what they've already claimed their core values are. The core values are just simply those things in life that are of greatest importance to them. It's when we do this, we start living life in an extremely effective way. All right, so this brings us to the end of section three of the course. Section four, we're now coming on to core values. This will be very different from the last few sections, but I know if you're ready for this, you're going to find this one massively eye-opening and hopefully also quite insightful.